Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 of the Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make Matt, it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails. Tomorrow's episode's going to be loaded with those. So excited to hear your guys' voicemails for the first time in a couple of months. But if you want to drop something for us over the weekend or for something for next week's episode, you can drop that at 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back. You know, I woke up this morning, I was looking on my phone, and I must have been half asleep this morning, still like kind of scrolling through Twitter. And you ever drop your phone on your face, like looking up at it as you're laying on your back? I dropped my phone on my face. I hit the corner of my phone, hit my lip, went into my tooth. Now I have this fat ass blue lip, just big ass blue lip now. So that's how my day started. How are you and what's going on, Matt?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I guess I could say my day started a little bit better than that. But I've certainly been there. That's one of
like such a dumbass. It just, you know, I was so mad in bed.
Moments where they're, you know, walking down the street, staring at their phone for some reason. You like walk into like a street sign or a telephone pole or something.
I've definitely done that too. But yeah, I was so mad this morning.
Face, that's the worst though.
I wanted to take my phone and throw it. And I'm like, oh great. I throw my phone and break it. And there's going to be nowhere to fix it for the next 2 months. So
yeah. No, you don't want to do when LeBron hit that buzzer beater in game 4 in the 2015 conference semis, I threw my phone at the wall. In my apartment and put a hole in the wall and broke my phone. So definitely don't recommend throwing your phone.
Well, we've got a packed show today. We want to talk a little bit about a article Joe Cowley wrote yesterday talking about Gar Foreman front office stuff. So that should be interesting. We'll get to that in the back end of the episode. But Matt, I just wanted to start the episode off by kind of updating people on coronavirus situation. Don't want to spend a whole ton of time on it, but we found out the other day that 4 Nets players had tested positive for it, including Kevin Durant. So the Bulls playing the Nets over the last course of the last 2 weeks, any players that were on that travel party are basically quarantining themselves. I don't know if the Bulls have gotten any tests yet. I haven't seen anything like that yet, but we know, at least for right now, none of the Bulls or any other personnel have tested positive. So that's good. So that's a little bit of an update from the Bulls side. I don't have anything else. Did you see any other type of update from the Bulls camp or anything like that?
No, just that they're, you know, taking the precaution because they did play the Nets Clinton in their second to last game before this, you know, coronavirus halt. Came down on, I believe it was, you know, Sunday of last week, so 2 Sundays ago. So because of that and because of the news about the Nets players testing positive, they're recommending that the Bulls are self-quarantining for, I think they said, the next 14 days. But we haven't heard anything about Bulls players getting tested yet. We did hear that the team advised them to, you know, if they start to feel any kind of symptoms, that they should get tested and told them where they can go to do that. So hopefully the Bulls entire roster continues to stay healthy and we don't get any updates about them testing positive. But you never know, considering there was, you know, a fair amount of time between when we heard not only about Rudy and then Donovan Mitchell and then Christian Wood, but several days between hearing about Christian Wood and then 4 Nets players testing positive. So I'd be surprised if we've heard the last of NBA players testing positive for this. It's just you got to hope that the number stays as low as possible, and that the Bulls are able to avoid this.
Yeah, I think as a society as a whole, too, you know, you think about everybody over the last, I don't know, 48, 72 hours, as much as possible. We're not doing a great job at it, but trying to quarantine ourselves, trying to work from home, everybody's kind of made their plans to do that. I just hope that these next few weeks, while all of, the majority of us, especially in the hot spots like Chicago, I know Boston's been one in Massachusetts as well, out in LA and San Francisco areas, another quote unquote hot zone, that this will see some, we'll see some type of improvement. But as we start to get more testing, we're going to see only numbers go up. So I hope people don't freak out about that and don't think that this quarantine thing isn't working, because it is. We've seen it work in other countries too. But we're definitely not, we're going to see numbers go up before they eventually come to a halt, hopefully, cross our fingers. But I was talking to my brother, and he's an EMT and a firefighter here in the area, in the Chicago area. And he was saying, yeah, it's been nonstop. And he said that they're just kind of preparing themselves for over the next course of the week, 10 days to get significantly worse. So, and he's talked about, I know Willowbrook was one of them here, a suburb in Chicago, had a huge outbreak in a nursing home. So that's been something that's been a huge fear for a lot of EMTs, anybody that's a first responder that's having to work in this. So he said it's been pretty crazy at work over the last week or so. So anybody out there that's a first responder or people that are having to go to work still, despite this virus, I feel for you. And I know for my brother and I, both of us are still going to work and have to go to work. So thank you to anybody out there that's doing that. And I also thought of this too, Matt, and you know, anybody in the Chicago area that maybe owns a bar or a restaurant that's staying open for carry out, for delivery, shoot us a DM, shoot us a tweet, drop us a voicemail or a text. We'd love to promote you. So hopefully people can go out and still, they're looking, they don't want to cook one day, can still go out and order delivery or carry out. We'd love to support businesses here in Chicago.
Absolutely. Because Chicagoans, just because we're, you know, hunkering down more so than usual. I mean, you know, we hibernate through the most of the winter months anyway, as it is, without a crazy wide-spreading virus to keep us indoors even more than usual. And, of course, that means some of our favorite eats from around the city. So I know I told you I'm actually heading up to my folks' place in northern Michigan later tonight to lay low there for a while. And before we leave, my brother and I are going out to the suburbs to our favorite pizza place, Baroni's of Glen Ellen, and loading up on a bunch of pizzas that we're going to drive up north with us. So
nice.
Delivery is certainly an easier option than going through all that trouble.
Yeah, I know last night I was in the city and I got delivery from Postmates. And it's kind of weird when I was talking with Postmates delivery driver for just a second. He's like, I don't know how you want to do this. And I'm like, I'll just pull it out of your bag so you don't have to touch anything. I don't touch anything that you're carrying with you. It's just, it's kind of weird because we're all going off of, you know, our best judgment right now. And it's just a strange, very, very strange time. Matt, I think we should spend the rest of the episode talking about this Gar Forman article, because this is very, very interesting to me. This isn't something that's very surprising, but I do like, with no actual games going on, Cowley has decided to dedicate his time to more front office articles, which are always great. But it sounds like from the statements from this article that it could be months, weeks before we see Gar Forman pretty much say goodbye to the organization, or at least be completely in the background at the worst case scenario, right?
I mean, I think so. My favorite part of that Cowley column was that he got a member of the Bulls organization quoted when asked about what's up with Gar Forman. The answer from a member of the Bulls organization was scouting in Siberia. So, I mean, of course, the mind wanders when you try to figure out who within the organization had that to say about Gar Forman and what exactly he is doing and where he is doing it right now. It is a more intensified version of what we've already heard from Cowley and other sources, which is that the Bulls essentially pushed Gar into an exclusively scouting role a while ago, and they do still value his scouting skills, but the whole title of GM and allowing him to be part of other basketball operations decisions has been lifted from his authority a long time ago. So, and there were a couple more blurbs about it in Casey Johnson's latest mailbag that dropped earlier this morning. People asking about front office. he sounded like it's still going to be offered to Gar to remain with the team in some kind of scouting role. Cowley's piece, on the other hand, makes it sound like Gar's days are numbered, and that, you know, maybe even the idea of, well, Gar, we're not going to have you be our GM anymore. We're bringing in a new, we're overhauling the front office, but we could still have you around as a scout if you'd like. Like, Cowley made it sound like maybe that is not even on the table for Gar anymore. So again, this is a wait and see what happens kind of situation, but true to Cowley's nature, he certainly was doing everything he could to make it sound like Gar is a man who deserves to be fired and is about to be fired.
It's crazy. You think about, too, I wonder if a lot of the younger Bulls fans out there realize that Gar Foreman shared Executive of the Year award with in 2011, which is kind of crazy. This is so far removed from that now. And think about all the moves that kind of came after that. The Marcus T draft, which Cowley mentions in his article, which is catastrophic on multiple levels, he put it at.
Good God.
But then the moves like the Doug McDermott move and the Cameron Payne move and the Cristiano Felicio signing. And that I think just beyond that, he took it to a different level when he would go out there and double down in the media and talk about these guys and like they were all stars or future stars of the
Paul
NBA.
Sitzer.
Yeah, I Paul mean, Sitzer. I mean, it's almost laughable to go and listen to some of the old videos from 3, 4, 5 years ago when they're talking about all these old Bulls players. It's like you would have thought that all of these guys were going to be around for, I don't know, a decade plus.
We've added Jerian Grant, who we talked about.
I mean, it's just it's so far removed from 2011, him winning that award.
Yeah, and look, I think if you go back and revisit that, I don't think it's bogus that he was given that award. I think that Gar did a lot of solid things in that year and a half or so as the Bulls were building towards a legitimate contender, a team that for several years was the only team that posed a real threat to whatever team LeBron James was playing. And not only, like, yes, you could say, okay, the Bulls got lucky. They landed a 1.7% chance of a number one pick, and that pick turned out to be Derrick Rose, who became the youngest MVP in league history. There were still internal debates about Derrick Rose or Michael Beasley. There were national debates about Derrick Rose or Michael Beasley. Famously, Stacey King, who is, you know, a Bulls fan favorite on the call with his great Stacey King-isms, you know, that are right into your living room every night that Bulls fans love. Stacey King wanted the Bulls to take Michael Beasley, and he was just one of several. So I guess you have to give him a little bit of credit for the fact that, yeah, you don't get credit for getting lucky as hell to get that number one pick, but they made the right call with that pick. And beyond that, they had some really solid signings to build out that bench mob that was such a crucial piece of that team and how successful they were. Because, yeah, the Bulls starting five was solid. Boozer was a consolation prize, but he was still like an 18-10 consolation prize. Joakim was in his prime. Luol Deng, one of the baby Bulls, now, you know, a veteran in his prime, a great leader for the team. But then the bench mob pieces, you know, Kyle Korver and right on down the list, the C.J. Watson and Ronnie Brewer and all these guys. Like, those were moves that the front office made to build a team around a very young rising star in Derrick Rose. So you have to give him credit for that, but it's just like, okay, well, that was 9 years ago now. And how many chances are you given after you get something right, but it falls short? And then, as you were saying, Ali, you know, highlighted, you know, there have just been too many missteps since that initial, okay, give him some credit.
You know, I think it's interesting that Kali says, The true face of your character comes when you're shown with some adversity. And I think that's such a great line because it is so true. Think about anything. I mean, think about everyday life to people in your lives, or think about yourself for that fact. How did you deal with that adversity, and how did other people perceive you maybe when you were going through something that was testing the worth of yourself? And it's funny because he says, if adversity measures the true worth of a person, it wasn't long before Foreman was exposed. And the first sight of that we saw was, instead of, you know, consulting and listening to what Tom Thibodeau was trying to tell him about Draymond Green, he instead got talked in by Kentucky coach John Calipari to take Marquise Teague. And there's a video still on YouTube from going back 7 years ago, talking about Marquise Teague, Gar Forman talking about Marquise Teague right after they had drafted him on that night. I mean, it's 3 minutes and 9 seconds of cringeworthy stuff because he backs Marquise Teague like he's going to be a future point guard for the next, I don't know, decade with this Bulls team, and a great complimentary backup piece to Derrick Rose. It was just, it just started that snowball effect of, hey, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to go out there and double down on this move, and I don't care what anybody else says. And it ultimately completely backfired on Gar to the point now we're at where he can't even speak into the, he can't speak to the media at all without getting absolutely killed every single time. When's the last time we heard from Gar Forman? Last year at the trade deadline?
Yeah, right around there. I mean, that's why Paxton took, I think, unwantingly, he took that mantle back from Gar because he realized that every time Gar opened his mouth, he shoved his own foot in it. And the media and fan base alike were calling him out for the fact that he was giving us this doublespeak and these just completely illogical statements and grandiose words of encouragement.
To retool, not rebuild.
Could see how poor the decisions were that were being made. And that's why we haven't heard from Gar in a long time. And that's why he's been shoved aside and sent to go scout and only go scout, because I think they finally realized that they were sick of his bad look reflecting on the organization as a whole. But that, like, and if there is, you know, to that end, if there's one thing about Cowley's column that I don't know if bothers me is the right term, but maybe I think rubs some Bulls fans the wrong way and just raises an eyebrow to say, well, hey, what about this? Is that, and true, you know, Cowley has attacked Gar on the regular for years now, highlighting his mistakes. And in doing so, it seems as though he is absolving Paxson of responsibility. Whereas everyone can say, okay, well, who does Gar report to? Gar reports to John. Any decisions that Gar has made as just Gar's decision have been cleared and approved by John Paxson. And then going further, in recent years, or certainly at least in the last year or two, if Gar's responsibilities as GM have been all but stripped and he is a glorified scout with a title only, then all of these other bad basketball ops decisions that have been made, those would be on John Paxson, no? Not Gar. Because if Gar's been stripped of power, you can't blame him for everything that's gone wrong in the last couple of years.
I'm with you on that. And I think part of the reason, maybe it's part of the reason is, and I feel like we had this conversation last year too, like right around the same time when, you know, we heard Paxson go off on all the radio shows and basically crack, but then we also kind of at some point felt a little bit of sympathy for him just because we were like, man, he's getting dumped on for all of this. Meanwhile, Gar Forman, who made a lot of these choices too, wasn't there to necessarily take any of the blame. And look, part of the reason too is the optics of the whole thing is John Paxson doesn't really seem to like to talk to the media all that much unless things are going well. And Gar Forman was just not a good public speaker. And I don't know how the Bulls, it took them to 2018, the start of 2018 season, to basically realize that. I mean, they were still running him out there every opportunity they had to have somebody from the front office speak, have Gar Forman go out there and talk. I mean, how can you have a guy go out there and talk when he says things like this?
We've talked about we're really hot on Bobby Portis, McDermott, Nicola Meritich, Felicio.
Listen to those guys. Listen to the players
the
he said he were hired.
He just named who is still here and didn't get traded is Felicio. That's ridiculous.
Isn't that wild? And that clip is from 3 years ago. It's only 3 years ago. Like, that is just absolutely insane. So I do understand that it does seem like that, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. A lot of the problems that people have had with the Bulls itself, like on the floor, is the missteps with evaluating their talents, the guys that they have had, the guys that they made deals for, the guys that they dealt away. And to me, it sounds like a lot of that tends to fall back on Gar Forman because of this quote unquote scout role, when in reality, maybe Paxson should have a little bit more to blame for that. So maybe you are right in that fact, but I don't think this necessarily means Cowley's absolving Paxson of all of the all of the fault from what's gone on with this Bulls team over the last half decade.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's and it's something that I think Cowley responded to somebody who was asking him in the column, like, hey, you know, why didn't you take any shots at Paxton here? And Cowley said, like, you know, there's certainly plenty of blame to go around, but you gotta, you know, weed through all the issues and start somewhere. And to me, that's what, like, the chronological order of what has gone wrong. Gar made some bad decisions that probably should have resulted in his firing a while ago. In the recent years of Paxton taking more of a mantle and coming back to the forefront as the face of the franchise and the face of the front office, there have also been some pretty questionable moves made and a lack of success that would be on Paxton. That, like, okay, if Fred Hoiberg was Gar's guy and Hoiberg didn't work out, that should result in Gar taking accountability for that bad move among all of the other ones and being fired. John Paxton doubling down on Jim Boylan just a year ago is proof enough to say you've been running this team for plenty of years now. There is no more obvious piece of evidence that you are behind the times in what you think you need to build a winning basketball organization and a winning culture when you put Jim Boylan in charge of it. That is a glaring red, you know, alarm bell that you don't know what you're doing and that you are behind the times and that you, sir, also deserve to be fired. So it's sort of like maybe Cowley's working from, you know, backwards to forwards, most, you know, going oldest, you know, mistakes up to present day and saying, well, they've kind of already stripped Gar of all of his power because of missteps he's made. So let's start by getting rid of him. And then it sounds like the Reinsdorfs, well, they're loyal to both Gar and John. The loyalty to John is bulletproof. Gar's is a little low. So even if they overhaul the front office, they're going to offer John some kind of new role. So, you know, take that for what it is.
Yeah, it turns into, like we were talking about a couple weeks ago, the Kenny Williams type of, let's move you up, get you out of the face of the media for a while, and see if things can improve. And I don't know if they will. Maybe this will reinvigorate something, because we both, I think, have agreed over the time that we've talked about Paxton that he's not a dummy. He knows basketball and he cares about this team. I think I would put his level of care for this team up against anybody, any one of us as fans. But we realize, too, that the job comes with a lot of stress. And when things aren't going your way, when things aren't going well, you have to deal with a lot of adversity. And we just see two examples of two guys that have a tough time dealing with the hard questions when things aren't going their way. I think I'm with you too. And I mean, it's taken us, what, 7 years to get to the point where we're talking about Gar Forman in the light of basically being out of the inner circle. And we don't even know that for sure. The other thing too is the loyalty from Jerry Reinsdorf with all of these guys. And it's like, maybe Paxton wanted Gar Forman to be out of the role that he was 3-4 years ago, but there was such strong loyalty from the Reinsdorfs that it kind of, you know, it was heard, but it was never acted on type of thing, to the point where now we're seeing it impact their pocketbooks outside the coronavirus thing. But before then, we saw people not showing up to the United Center, people really just not even giving a shit about this team. So it puts the Bulls in a weird dynamic. And I don't know who wants to follow in the footsteps of Gar Forman either, which makes, I think, the search for a new GM even more, I mean, more bizarre, because who wants to fill the footsteps of a guy that got basically shit on for the last 5 years, was kept around because of loyalty and made all of these mistakes? You're coming into a place with a fan base that has zero, zero, zero patience for mistakes being made, because we've dealt with that for the last, what, half decade? So I don't know. I don't know if that limits the amount of candidates that want to come here and take this GM job. And even if the Bulls hold a search for a GM, even if they hold a search for a GM, I think the candidates are going to be limited. Who wants to come here and deal with all that?
Well, I wish I had an easy answer for you, Jordan. I don't. I think that's what Bulls fans have to wait for. But speaking of searches and speaking of easy answers, let's talk about Postmates for a second. from an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game or, you know, watch a Bulls game from 1996, sometimes you just need what you need, and that is food delivered fast. So that's where Postmates comes in. You probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I know I do. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. Jordan, we were just talking about this earlier on as we opened the show, especially in today's climate of coronavirus and staying indoors. Postmates is going to be clutch for all of you out there for your delivery needs. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right here in Chicago, right to my door. But it's not just burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery store deliveries, whatever I can think of. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So, especially right now when everyone is isolated and quarantining and social distancing, no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about that lunchtime delivery when I'm working from home. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, and here's the best part, Postmates is giving our Locked On Bulls listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download that Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
Postmates is dope. I used it yesterday. Ordered from China Doll. I got some bomb-ass chicken fried rice, and I was just...
Dude, I had chicken fried rice like 2 days ago.
Oh, it was so good. I was just in a fix for it. Oh, that is a solid choice. Solid, solid choice. But downtown Chicago, man, has like some of the greatest Chinese restaurants around. Like, Chinese food is the best. It's the most filling too. You get the most amount for your money too. So yeah, I used Postmates yesterday. It was quick too. I think it took 25 minutes and we had our food right in front of us just in time for the tip off on NBC Sports Chicago, Matt, for the 96 Bulls start of their playoff run, which was kind of cool. My buddies and I were laughing because we're like, how many kids are watching this right now that only know Rex Chapman from his Twitter?
I know, right? Who probably don't know him other than the fact that he's just a Twitter celebrity. And yeah, no, he was a member of the Miami Heat when the Bulls played the Heat in that first round series in 96. It was so crazy. There was even one point in the game where he was involved in a play and they put up a graphic of him. And I'm like, hey, what do you know? It's Rex Chapman.
I get people liked the 90s basketball era better. And the one thing I will say that's better then than it is now is even in that first quarter, Matt, when I was watching back last night, dudes on every possession wanted to beat the shit out of each other. So Dennis Rodman throwing elbows left and right in the first quarter. I mean, it was insane the intensity level that those guys were at for a first-round playoff game. That is completely different from what we see now. And now it's, okay, first-round playoff, playing the 8 seed, playing the Magic, and we're going to dump on them in 4 games, sweep them out of here, and not really give a shit. But back then it was like, and we're going to go all hold bar, lay everything out on the floor. And it was fun to watch, but the actual basketball was all right. It was okay.
Well, look, it's a different era. It's different basketball. Not as fast paced, not as many three. I was like astonished as I was watching, like people were chucking up threes, and it was so funny how bad people's 3-point
right?
shots were.
Right?
Like you saw Stevie Kerr, who actually was pretty quiet in that game. But like Tony Kukoc knocked down a couple, the Heat made a couple, but like so many people were chucking threes that were just bricks. And you're like, oh, people didn't learn how to shoot those. It's 1996 and people don't know how to shoot 3-pointers. And all of their 3-point shots were like crazy flat. They had no arc. And I was just like, oh my God, like the fact that Steph Curry ever became a thing that existed is crazy. When you go back and watch a game from his father's generation or sort of like in between his father's generation and his, it's nuts. But the thing you said about the battles, yeah, it was different. Maybe it was a little bit uglier. But like watching, you know, Big Z, Alonzo Mourning, like Dennis Rodman on the block, it was so entertaining. Because like that is the basketball that I grew up watching. And it took me back to a game that was maybe a little less elegant, but definitely physical, and you felt like the was coming through your living room TV. And it was, you know, I think I tweeted about this at some point last night. the Bulls were on a fast break, and Rodman was the trailer on the fast break coming, you know, flying down the lane. He gets the pass, goes up, gets clobbered. Like, I mean, clobbered. And, okay, ref tweets the whistle, foul, go to the free throw line, take your free throws. And I was like, in today's NBA, without a doubt, all of the officials would have huddled over at the scorer's table and watched a replay of that play a dozen times to decide whether or not it was warranting a flagrant one. And they probably should have, or they probably would have, assessed it as a flagrant one, if not like a straight out flagrant two ejection. But in 1996, it was like, yeah, okay, that's a foul. Take your shots and let's keep the game moving. And I know that it's such an old man yells at cloud take for me to have, even though I am not in body an old man. I am a young middle-aged man, but I have the mind of old man yells at cloud, and I miss that. I miss that about the NBA. It is such a soft league, and I don't care if you think I'm an old grump for having that take, because I watched that game from 1996 last night, and I loved every second of it. Take your free throws. Get out of here with these flagrant soft-ass bullshits.
Yeah, the closest thing we get to that now is Draymond Green kicking guys in the nuts. Like, that's the closest we get to hard fouls. It is funny, though. You think about the social media reaction that would have been around if, say, that was live. I mean, the way that we react to stuff on social media now, today, even just games and the playoffs, I mean, every 30 seconds there would have been a viral video of someone getting absolutely clobbered at the basket like you were talking about. The funniest thing, too, you brought up the three-pointers, and you listen to the broadcast, Tom Doerr. After that first quarter, he goes, oh, well, this is kind of unprecedented. We've seen a lot of Miami's offense coming from around the perimeter. I'm just dying laughing. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, three-pointers were not essential part of the game at all for a lot of teams. And I'm like, the fact that the Miami Heat, I think they knocked down five or six threes in that first quarter. And like, that was the main storyline for that first quarter coming out of the break. I found it very funny. The other thing, too, is Tom Doerr, my dad texted me. I texted him, and I was like, turn on NBC Sports, watch the first game of the playoffs going into 96. He texts me back, and he goes, played Tom Doerr in high school basketball. Tom Doerr went to East Leiden High School. My dad went to Morton West and played him in high school. And he goes, the dude was 7'2 in high school and literally didn't even have to jump to dunk and basically made a career for himself. And he ended up being a NBA basketball player. But I found it very funny that the 3-point game was just, it was like something that people had never seen. And that was only what, I guess now we're talking about 25 years ago, but still how NBA has evolved in general is just absolutely nuts.
Yeah. And you know, obviously, Bulls fans have always had a soft spot for Steve Kerr, and he's a guy who, whether front office in Phoenix or his broadcasting years and now coaching Golden State, and, you know, they had Steve Kerr segments in that I'm Back special that ran before and after the 96 rerun on NBC Sports Chicago last night. He was the elite three-point shooter in the league during those times. In 95-96, he led the NBA with 51.5% from behind the three-point line. Do you know how many three-point attempts per game Steve took?
I'm going to say 4.
2.9. And that is the biggest number of three-point attempts 2.9. per game he averaged in any season in his, what, like 15-year career?
2.9.
Dude was a three-point specialist who never averaged more than 3 attempts per game.
That is so... 2.9, and we talk Steve Kerr. We talk about Steve Kerr as being like one of the best three-point shooters ever, right? Like him,
yeah.
Ray Allen. James Harden, this season, his three-point attempt rate, 12.6 three-point attempts per game. Per game!
12.6!
That's so
ridiculous.
Oh my God. For a guy that's touted as, you said 2.6, right? Derrick Rose this season, his average 3-point attempts, 2.9. So that's like Derrick Rose level of shooting threes, which we know Derrick Rose isn't a knockdown 3-point shooter. Just crazy the level of change the NBA has gone through and so rapidly. But again, I will defend basketball games in the third and the fourth quarter, unless they were close back then. It was brutal to watch, man. Like, I don't know how people bitch and complain about the NBA now. I get it. Oh, they take too many threes. Oh, they're shooting threes. And I don't understand it.
It's a different game.
It is.
The game has evolved. And, you know, there are certain beauties to the game now that didn't exist back then. But honestly, like, I loved watching the weird, like, MJ-infused triangle offense as a kid. Like, that's what I understood beautiful offensive basketball to be. And watching it last night was not only a very, like, nostalgic feeling for me, but I was like, man, like, it was so genius of Phil Jackson and Tex Winter to be like, all right, so we've got this triangle offense, and this is how you use this offense to get looks for everybody. And then also added to that is just like the X factor, the wild card that is Michael Jordan being Michael Jordan. And if we are halfway or two thirds of the way through our 24-second shot clock and the triangle hasn't presented anything, then give it to MJ and he'll shoot a turnaround fadeaway mid-range shot. And we know that's 2 points. It was just like automatic. It was so efficient that it seemed oftentimes to be automatic. And I think that's why that 95-96 Bulls team was so unbeatable, is that they had a system that they knew would work they could execute it to perfection. And between that and how amazingly talented and lengthy they were on the defensive end, like, I think Ron Harper and Scottie Pippen combined for like a dozen steals in that game one, you know, that they replayed last night of that first round series against Miami. And some of them were just so impressive. Scottie just wiping the ball when the guy with the ball was not paying attention. Ron Harper, like, cutting off inbounds passes, cutting off passing lanes. They were straight up dominant on both ends of the floor.
The thing that blew my mind is seeing MJ miss shots. Like, for somebody who's young, for somebody who's young, and like, a lot of the highlights I watched of MJ are just him knocking down shots, hitting incredible shots, dunking the ball. But then to watch like real full games and see MJ come out in that first quarter, do like a step back fadeaway and miss. It's like, oh shit, I forgot Michael didn't go 100% from the field all the time. So I think other people my age or a little bit younger that were watching those games last night probably felt similarly. Matt, before we get out of here, I want to ask you one thing. Because of the I'm back facts yesterday, I was too young. I was only a year old when MJ came back. Do you remember anything significant about that day? Like, do you remember exactly where you were when you found out the news that MJ was coming back? It's like one of those sports moments I feel like a lot of people have throughout their lifetime that they can pinpoint 2, 3, 4, maybe half a dozen times where something so big in sports, you remember exactly the time and place that you were at. You can almost visualize it. Do you remember anything like that, or is that not a memory that serves like that for you?
Oh, I remember vividly. And by the way, the fact that you said that you were 1 year old when the I'm back facts happened just makes, oh God, it makes me so depressed. sometimes I forget the gap in years that exists between us. But yes, I remember vividly because the facts came on March 18th, 1995. My birthday is March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So I remember it as, oh my God, this is the greatest birthday present I could ever ask for, because there were rumors swirling around and everything you go back and read that came out, you know, yesterday and the day before, all the I'm back stuff that all kinds of media outlets were pumping out because people need content right now. The rumors swirled for a while. And of course, you know, Reed Jack, the Chicago sports historian, had a great piece that NBC Sports Chicago published detailing everything about the baseball strike and, you know, even starting back in the first weeks of February and how the baseball strike ultimately affected MJ's decision, all the way to MJ showing up at the Berto Center, showing up at the practices. And then once people got a whiff of that, then it was like a media frenzy out in Deerfield, where the old practice facility, the Berto Center, used to be. And so, like, it was being reported in the newspaper every morning. And, like, what was being reported wasn't anything concrete. It was all just speculation. It was, MJ's here. We think MJ's here. And then the next day it was, well, we know MJ's here because we saw him get out of his car and he didn't talk to the media. Or today we saw MJ leaving the Berto Center in his car, but he still didn't talk to anybody. But he's here. What could that mean? And so for at least a week leading up to the official announcement on March 18th, I was like reading all these things in the newspapers in the morning before school, being like, oh my God, is it actually happening? because I loved watching, you know, the whole MJ baseball experience, but I was more a Bulls fan than a White Sox fan, and I wanted MJ to come back. I wanted my Bulls to win more titles led by the greatest ever. And so I was at school and people were, you know, talking about it, you know, in the cafeteria, like, oh my God, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And then there were a couple people who were like, oh, I talked to my, you know, my mom who was here to drop off my lunch. And she said that she heard something from dad who heard something from his friend at work. And like rumors were everywhere. And then I remember getting home from school and seeing it, like turning on SportsCenter and being like, it's real. I remember standing with the remote control in my hand, just standing in the middle of my old living room in the house where I grew up, watching the reports break through on ESPN that it was real and that MJ was coming back and that he was going to play the next night in Indianapolis. And I just stood there in awe of what was happening.
Can't even imagine how the city would have reacted. And, you know, my dad tries to do the same thing. He tries to describe it for me, but I'm like, it's one of those things that unless you are there in the moment to understand, he's like, you don't really get how much of an impact this had on the entire world, not just the sports world too. It's bizarre. Maybe that's something I'd like to hear from our listeners. If there's a moment in your lifetime that you can vividly remember when you got news about a big, massive story, and maybe it's not even an NBA story, but if you have an NBA or a Bulls story that you remember, similar to Matt's, where he remembers exactly where he was when the I'm Backs came out, if you remember any of that, drop us a voicemail or a text. I'd love to kind of go through those in the next week, because there's a handful of Matt that I can pinpoint, and a couple of them are in NBA or Bulls related, but I still think they're very, very interesting, and I want to know what kind of moments our fans or our listeners have in their lifetime, because I feel like that is just, it speaks to the generations of sports fans and what you remember. Like, I have random ones. Like, I'll give you a random one that's not NBA related. I remember the exact place I was when the Cubs traded for Nomar Garciaparra. Like, that was, to me, a massive trade, a massive, massive deal for Chicago. Yeah. For like a whole, I don't know, a year. I was at a baseball tournament. Somebody had tapped me on the shoulder, and I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 at the time, and said, yeah, Nomar Garciaparra, the Cubs just traded for him. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, holy shit. To me, that was one, but it's random because Nomar didn't have much of an impact here in Chicago at all because of his devastating injury. But little things like that, I want to hear from our listeners. So hit us up, 331-979-1369. You can tweet at us too, or drop us a DM at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. I think that's going to about do it for us here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks so much for listening. Everybody out there, stay safe. Again, if you own a restaurant, a bar, anything that's staying open for carryout or delivery, shoot us a DM, tweet at us, drop us a text or a voicemail, and we'll try to promote it the best as possible here on Locked On Bulls. Get people to use your business, give you guys a little bit of business while we are dealing with coronavirus and our quarantine. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Paul Zipster, who we're high on.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com